Well, welcome back here to Systematically Wild, and I'm glad to bring in Kevin Lucco here again. And you know, Kevin, I'm gonna just continually throw dirt on the Minnesota Wild, because every time I seem to do that, they come up with a nice week, and all of a sudden they're back in the playoff picture again.
No doubt, you know, it was a very newsworthy week for the team. You know, by the time we got our show out there that we record on Monday, you know, it was. The trade deadline had came and gone, and there was very familiar names leaving the team, and then the team came through with some really good performances over the week. So it was a very active week.
Well, what was interesting about the trades, Kevin, is that a lot of guys lost on the big club, but it looked like that the AHL team was the one that benefited the most out of it. So give us your thoughts on the trades and how they will work for the Minnesota Wild benefit, if they do.
Well, I think, you know, seeing as we cover all three levels, we have to start with the AHL trade, where Nick Batan, who has been a catalyst for the offense for Iowa, was moved to the New York Rangers organization, and that was kind of a shocker. But you know, it could be a thing where Batan may have requested to move on, and just felt like he wasn't going to get that opportunity with Minnesota. Turner Ellison, who's been a long time minor leaguer in the Rangers system, came to Iowa. He's a very experienced AHL forward, and well, hopefully we'll bring some leadership to the club. Another addition to Iowa was Luke Toporowski, who came from Boston in the Pat Maroon trade. And Toporowski, you know, was probably another guy who was looking for a change of scenery. I have to say, for you guys out there that have followed hockey for a long time, look up Luke's dad, Carey Toporowski, and you will see some really astonishing penalty minute numbers. That's not Luke's game, but boy, his dad had quite a reputation in the minors. I believe Michael Russo of the Athletic up in Minnesota had a quote from former Wild forward Wes Walls, where Walls said, "Geez, you even had to have your head on a swivel when you're playing on his team." But that doesn't seem to be Luke's game. Luke was struggling with Providence and needed a change of scenery. Actually, he's a Bettendorf, Iowa guy, so he is the first Iowa-born player to play for the Iowa Wild. And he got a goal in the game, the victory on Sunday afternoon, being obviously the first Iowa-born player to score for Iowa. So I think you're right. I think it was a little bit of a injection of life for the Iowa Wild, too, along with Minnesota getting some draft picks for the 2026 draft.
Connor Dewar dealt to the Maple Leafs as well for Dmitry.
Have fun with that one.
Chinnikov? Am I even close on that?
I'm on with it. You could have said about anything there. I'd say, yeah, that sounds good.
So, again, really doing some benefits for the AHL club there a little bit. And Brandon Duhaime also traded to the Colorado Avalanche. So a lot of former Iowa Wild guys headed out the door. I'm curious, though, the Batan thing, you know, because you said a lot during the season, is that great AHL player, didn't look like he had a future in the Minnesota Wild system, because just his game just didn't translate, at least within the Wild system. So do you see him maybe having some success and finally making a regular stay with the Rangers?
Hard to say. I mean, the Rangers are such a good club right now that it might be hard for him to get the call up to the Rangers. And, you know, guys after a while just become career AHL guys, and Batan is been starting to get that reputation because, you know, he had a few shots with Minnesota, but granted, you know, whereas he's playing top line minutes on power play in Iowa, you know, he's like a fourth, maybe a third liner for Minnesota and has not seen much of a chance to display his abilities. So could be a thing where he goes to the Rangers, finishes the season, and then I'm not sure of his contract. Maybe he's a free agent again, and then he looks at resetting things and going somewhere else for next year.
Well, let's look at the week here, Kevin. A 5-2 victory in Arizona on Thursday, a 2-1 overtime loss in Colorado on Friday. Still come away with a point out of that. And then a dramatic 4-3 overtime victory at home on Sunday against the Nashville Predators. Team goes 2-0-1, 5 points during the week there. That was quite an impressive performance, especially for a team that had a lot of, you know, turmoil going around with the, around them with the trade deadline going on. Had an impressive week.
Yeah, the Friday night game, or I'm sorry, the Thursday game in Arizona, you know, there was a looming thoughts over who was going to be moved, and Brandon Duhame, I guess he actually packed 2 suitcases worth of stuff just in case he was moved, and he was before the team took the ice on Thursday, so I'm sure that was on a lot of guys' minds, and it took a couple periods for the Wild to get going and had a 2-0 lead. Arizona scored twice, but then the Wild were able to bounce back from that and get the victory on Friday night. Thursday night, getting my days mixed up again. And then Friday, then you got the drama of Pat Maroon and Connor Dewar both being traded. And then you're going up against an incredibly skilled Colorado team. You fall down 1-0 in the first minute. But you managed to play a really good game, and it took a iffy penalty call in the overtime for Colorado to get a 4-on-3, and you're just not going to, with all that firepower Colorado, you're not going to hold them down on a 4-on-3. So still got a point out of that, and then come back home and played really well against the Nashville team that just doesn't want to lose in regulation anymore, and then come out with an overtime victory when John Hines played Riverboat Gambler, pulled Marc-Andre Fleury for an extra attacker in overtime, risking the points they already had in the bank, and ended up working as Minnesota scores shortly thereafter. So 5 out of 6 points for the week. I don't think you could ask for much else.
Well, let's start with that Thursday night game, Kevin, because Kaprizov scores his 30th goal of the season, third time in his career that he winds up reaching that mark. That gives the team a 1-0 lead. Arizona battles back with great goaltending for much of this contest. Then the third period goes completely ballistic. 2 goals early in that period, 7 seconds apart, give Arizona a 2-1 lead. But Minnesota refuses to go away. They tie the game just 32 seconds later. Wild start to that period. Joel Eriksson-Ek puts the team on top about 5 minutes later. And then it is 2 empty net goals in the final 1 minute and 12 seconds to give Minnesota the victory. Connor Dewar scores in his last game with the team. But, man, what went on with that game? I mean, all of a sudden, you know, the tight battle for 40 minutes, and then a little bit of craziness goes on, and these teams all of a sudden looking like they're playing run-and-gun hockey all of a sudden.
It was an odd game like that. I mean, the first two periods were very plodding, and you know, Arizona's just been horrible the second half of the season. And, you know, likewise, they had some guys moving on, too. Jason Zucker going to Nashville. Matt Dumba's going to Tampa Bay. They're, one or both of them were held out of the lineup. So, you know, Arizona had their own obstacles, too. But they had a very good 10-second spread there to get a couple goals. But fortunately, the Wild were able to withstand it and come back and win the game.
Yeah, big victory for Marc-Andre Fleury. 23 saves in the contest to get the win. As Kevin mentioned, the next night, a tough 2-1 loss against Colorado in overtime. A lot of transactions going on, but they wind up getting a point out of it, though. Brock Faber gets the 1 goal for Minnesota. That came 10:44 into the second period. then it is the victory goal for Colorado, 2:32 into the extra session. Another great performance and goal for the team as the Wild get 38 saves out of Gustafson in that contest. And as you mentioned, I mean, you're having a lot of turmoil with trades going on and tough back-to-back nights playing in Colorado, a team with that, you know, obviously one of the best talented teams in the NHL. Coming away with a point out of that is a huge victory for this team.
I thought so. Yeah, you know, you like to get greedy and get that additional point, but, you know, nothing to hang your head about going out of Colorado with a point.
So they return home on Sunday, Kevin, back and forth contest. Brodin scores his seventh goal of the season at 3:16 into the first. Back-to-back goals for Nashville give them a 2-1 lead before Kaprizov scores his 31st goal of the season, this time on the power play. But a little over a minute left in the second. Ryan Hartman gives Minnesota the lead to make it 3-2, 12:28 into the third with his 16th goal of the season. Nashville able to tie the game with a little over 2 minutes left in the contest, but is Matt Boldy scoring his 24th of the season, 3:50 into the extra session, giving Minnesota the victory. Kevin, explain a little bit about why Minnesota would want to pull their goaltender in overtime, risking the point there.
Well, first of all, you know, I do want to make an observation on the game. A couple of the Minnesota goals were goals that happened right around the goal mouth, and I've thought that Minnesota has been relying too much on their perimeter game. So I was really happy to see them get a couple of the greasy goals like they did. And then to see Ryan Hartman break out of a goalless drought with a breakaway goal in the third period. But, you know, I'm watching the game in person. And I'm seeing in overtime when Minnesota's got the puck, Marc-Andre Fleury is coming out to, like, the top of the faceoff circles. And to me, I thought, well, that's just Fleury being Fleury. He's probably yelling directions at the guys or even trying to be, like, a fourth player if they wanted to play the puck back to him. But then he makes the mad dash. And I'm thinking, okay, well, it's on now. They're either going to get two or nothing. And moments later, I mean, you could just feel the buzz in the building. Like, people were, like, just in awe that they pulled their goalie like this. But it didn't last for long as Boldy scored and set the place into delirium. But for NHL rules, if you pull your goalie in a non-delay penalty situation in overtime and the other team would score, you would come away with 0 points. So John Hines in his post-game press conference said, you know, right now in the situation we're in, we're not looking for 1 point, we're looking for two. And I guess from reading accounts of the game, it was something they discussed going into overtime, and it wasn't a spontaneous decision. The guys knew that this could potentially be happening. So it was just a matter of having the right guys on the ice and having possession, and it all seemed to work out.
Marc-Andre Fleury with 27 saves in the game, Kevin. You were talking to us last week about the fact of maybe the team tries to keep him around for another season, and the way he's been playing lately, I don't really think that's a crazy idea.
I don't think it is either. I can't see someone that enjoys the game so much and enjoys being around his team so much. I can't see him going out with a season like this. I mean, I'm not saying it's been a bad season for him, but I'm just, and to the contrary, I mean, right now he's playing like he did as a young player in his 20s. So I can't see him going out knowing that he's got some good hockey left in him.
Well, looking ahead this week, Kevin, so the team in third place in the wild card standings right now, 69 points, 31, 27, and 7. They're 6 points behind a struggling Vegas team that did get a little help a couple nights ago with a victory, but a team that is just not what we saw a month ago. And Nashville looks like they may be a little bit more difficult to try to catch here, but I, you know, Vegas looks vulnerable right now, and I think if you're the Wild, you think we might have a serious shot here.
Vegas did make some moves at the trade deadline to bolster their team, and I'm thinking that might be what they needed to get over the hump a bit. So it's, you know, so it's going to be tough. 6 points out, and then don't forget St. Louis is in the mix too there. So I'm just really, at this point as a fan, just really not getting my hopes up too much.
I get you. And there are a lot of teams trailing, like, right behind them. Seattle's got 67 points, 2 points behind. Calgary with 67. St. Louis with 67, as Kevin mentioned. That's probably the cutoff right there, is Arizona at 57. So you're looking at, for, if you just said battling for the final spot in there, that's five teams that have a legitimate shot of, you know, catching Vegas or Vegas getting that final spot. So it's going to be a very interesting next few weeks to see who's, you know, when we reach March, who really is in this picture. But I wouldn't be surprised, Kevin, if we're at the end of March here and all of five of those teams are still in the picture.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And, you know, for fans of the Wild, it just makes it more interesting if they're still sniffing a playoff spot and not just playing out the string.
Let's drop down to the AHL club, Kevin, as Manitoba gets a 4-1 victory in Des Moines on Saturday, and then the Wild battle back to get a 6-3 victory on Sunday. You and I talked about a need for an absolute sweep. They do not come away from that this week. So we'll start this week, Kevin, in last place, continuing in that spot. Still just 3 points behind Manitoba for the final spot, but boy, they really needed those 4 points.
I think so. You know, Manitoba's got games in hand on the Wild, too, and I felt like Iowa needed to win both of those. And, you know, much like we were talking about the trade deadline, you're welcoming two new guys into the lineup, and you're saying goodbye to Nick Batan, who was a huge part of the team. So those are tough games when you're just trying to get used to the guys on your own team. So Iowa just did not have it on Saturday night, but came back on Sunday and looked good.
Well, Saturday night's game is one of those I just hate to see, Kevin, because you get a fantastic goaltending performance out of Allstead. It's scoreless game through two periods, and Caden Bankier gives the team the lead 1:44 in the third. You're thinking, man, this is incredible. Your goaltender's super hot. Power play goal turns the contest, it looked like, as Reichel scores his 14th of the season, and all of a sudden Manitoba's tied. They get the go-ahead goal a little over a minute later, and then add two empty net goals. And I thought, man, this is the game you have to go out and win. Your goaltender is just playing lights out, and then a penalty just disrupts everything that you're doing, and you're kind of giving that game away. I hate to use that term, but I thought, what a heart-wrenching way to lose that contest.
No doubt, and like, you know, like you're saying, and at this point, you know, the Wild are much like the parent team where, you know, they're looking to get 2 points tonight. They're not looking at one, and they're definitely not looking at zero, obviously. So it was tough to not get the win there.
Volstead with 27 saves in the contest. They do come back with a 6-3 victory on Sunday. Manitoba scores the first goal of the game. Iowa comes back. Toporowski gets his first goal since joining the club there, so impressive power play goal for the team. Will Butcher adds his 6th of the season, just a minute 9 left in the first. 26 seconds apart in goals right there to give the team a 2-1 lead. Manitoba able to tie the game early in the second period, but Iowa responds with 4 unanswered goals. Bankier with a 2nd goal in as many nights. Simon Johansson scores his 7th of the season at 13:26. And then Stephen Fogarty with his 14th with a minute 4 left in the second. Kevin Conley scores his 6th of the season at 7:59 of the third. And Manitoba able to get one more goal, but not able to get anywhere closer than that. Volstead with 32 saves. Huge victory, Kevin, to at least keep some. I mean, you can't really say their playoff chances are slim. They're 3 points away in this division where it's clearly going to be a race between these final three teams for that spot. So I guess if you're looking for a silver lining, you didn't really give Manitoba any room to get away from you, and you didn't really, you know, hurt yourself in terms of Chicago being right ahead of you either.
No, but boys, you know, right now, you win that game on Saturday night, and you're 1 point. I know you would be 1 point ahead of the Moose, and you'd be tied with Chicago, and that, you know, that looks a little rosier with, even though both the Moose and the Wolves have two games in hand.
Well, even if they do, you're saying to yourself, hey, we're still on top. They got to catch us. They got to win with those games. And it's just like, wow, that's, well, they're going to get a chance to regroup, Kevin. It's Friday and Saturday. They're going to go head to Grand Rapids. Not an easy place to play there at all. The second place team in the division right now. So Iowa at 20, 31, and 5. Again, 3 points behind Manitoba. Grand Rapids in second with 64 points. After facing Grand Rapids, they will then head for Chicago on Sunday. So three huge games in three nights. You've got to look at this and think to yourself, you still got to get at least 4 points out of this. You know, I mean, you can't afford to get anything less than that at this point.
If you're not motivated, if you're with Iowa right now, I don't know what it's going to take, because
yeah,
this could be a make or break weekend for their season. If you come out with three losses, well, that would guarantee that the Wolves would win one game, and who knows what the Moose would do. You could get buried. So they got to look at the rest of the season like every game is a playoff game.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I come back to a comment I was making to you last week, is that I feel like this coaching change hasn't dramatically changed this club in any way. And I'm not faulting them in any direction, but I'm just wondering if that was the effect you were looking for. It didn't look like they got it so far this year.
No, and you wonder, like I said, McLean was guy from Dean Evason's staff, and you just wonder, now with Evason gone, is John Hines going to want someone that he's got a rapport with as his coach in the AHL? So could be yet another change being made once the season concludes.
Well, let's drop down to the Iowa Heartlanders, who had a golden opportunity to win both these games in Wichita over the weekend, came away empty-handed as they scored two goals early on, have 2-0 leads in both those contests, wound up allowing Wichita to just roll at certain points to get back and come away with the victories. And I understand where this is still a fairly young organization, a fairly young club going out on the ice, but I think the days of making excuses and saying, well, we looked good for 30 minutes or something are over. And you got to feel those were two very disappointing losses.
Yeah, that was, like you said, two very winnable games. Wichita's not having that great of a season, and then they just did not get the results either night.
So Kevin McKernan scores twice in this contest to give Iowa the lead, first coming at 17:36 of the first, then 2:26 of the second. But it is Jeremy Masella, then Leighton Moore, who scores his fifth to tie the game. Braden Watts, who's really been struggling lately, starting to catch a little bit of momentum for himself, gives Wichita the lead. Bradley Merrick scores on the power play to make it 4-2. Kyle Masters, after Wichita choked away a few opportunities to really blow this game open, Kyle Masters cut it to a one-goal deficit with just 2:36 left in the contest, but Iowa not able to get the equalizer. Hunter Jones played very well in the game, comes back. We haven't seen him in a little while, Kevin, but he made 35 saves in the contest, and maybe, I guess, he does still have some kind of future with the organization.
I guess, you know, if I read to read between the lines, I thought I read somewhere that maybe he was coming off an injury, and maybe that's why he was not playing as much lately, so that could be the deal.
Let's hope that's the case. On Saturday, it is a 2-0 lead for the Heartlanders again. They score 5:48 when Louis Boudin scores on the power play, his 15th of the season. Dakota Robb scores his 7th goal just before the 10-minute mark. Team's rolling, but Braden Watts gets his 11th. Braden Saigon scores his third at a 13-11. Jay Dickman scores a little under a minute later to give Wichita the lead. Then Kobe Walker scores with a little over 2 minutes left in the second. Jason Pinio adds his 11th of the season to give Wichita the 5-2 victory. A tough night for Peyton Jones on this one, Kevin, as he had 27 saves in the contest, gave up 5 goals. And, you know, one factor I look at this organization that I thought really influenced how this season has gone, it was when Volstead got called up to go to Sweden, and then he was kind of hanging around there when Gustafson was out for a little bit. And the organization moved up, both Hunter Jones and Peyton Jones come up. I don't think that the Heartlanders have been the same since that goaltending carousel went on for a little bit. They just have struggled ever since then.
You know, Drew DeRitter was a little bit of a shot in the arm, and he helped them to some victories too. But, you know, it's tough, for especially for the goalies too, where you're going from where you're playing every game to where you're moving up, and now you're a backup, and now you're only seeing shots in practice. So it's got to be tough for the goalies to get into a groove. And like we talked about with Volstead in Iowa, you know, he did the Sweden trip, then he was up with Minnesota and only saw action in one game, and it did not go well, and then he was fighting an injury before he even got to Minnesota. So, you know, I was going to make a point when you were going through the Iowa games for the week. I mean, it was really good games for Volstead with Iowa. And now you get down to the ECHL, and now Hunter Jones is coming off an injury, and now you got to try to get him in a groove, but yet try to get playing time for Peyton Jones and throwing a bone to Drew DeRitter every so often. So it's got to be tough to try to keep three goalies fresh down there.
And that's a very good point, Kevin. And it doesn't get any easier for the team as they come home finally here after a little bit of stretch out on the road. But they are 22-28-7 in last place in the Central Division. Wheeling comes to town for 3 games. They're in second place in this division at 32-24-2, 66 points. Tied with Indy right now, but by percentage, winning percentage points, they're actually a little bit behind Indy, but for some reason the ECHL believes they're still the better team. So we'll say they are. So we'll go with 66 for them and for Indy out there. But I don't think you're clearly not looking for a serious shot at making a playoff spot with Fort Wayne being 14 points ahead. But they played very well against Wheeling. So I don't think it's crazy to say that you seriously think to yourself, we can get at least 4 points out of this, maybe even 5, because this is a team we've handled fairly well.
And considering where they're at in the standings now, it could be a thing too, or the pressure could be off the players too. And those teams that don't have the pressure of making the playoffs can become very dangerous. And I'm thinking the Heartlanders are looking for a tough series with Wheeling, as they went out and they got and acquired Nico Blockman, signed him to a contract. Blockman, since the pandemic, has played for Florida, South Carolina, Florida again, Norfolk, Savannah, Allen, Adirondack, and Kalamazoo. In 103 games played, he has accumulated 498 penalty minutes.
Wow. That's working. That kind of number. So that should be interesting.
Keep an eye out on that over the weekend, and I'll be interested, too, to see. There are starting to be some teams in the NCAA ranks that are having their seasons ending, and seniors are looking for a chance to break into the pro ranks. We'll see if Iowa decides to take a flyer on some of those guys. I know they had some luck with that last year, so we'll see if some new blood comes in.
Now I want to talk about the bright spot, I think, for this club out there, Kevin, because we've seen them as the seller team for the first couple of years. But right now, holding off Rapid City in the Western Conference, who's 6 points behind them. Rapid City is going to be facing a bunch of Mountain Division teams who are trying to bolster their playoff hopes, including closing out the season with three against Wichita, who suddenly find themselves in the playoff hunt out there, tied with Utah for the fourth spot in that division. And they're ahead of Atlanta, who has a worse record out there in the East, and are tied right now with Savannah in terms of 51 points. So, yeah, I think if you're looking for some real bright spots, it's a team that may still finish last in their division, but they're not going to be the cellar dwellers of the league out there, not even going to be the cellar dwellers of the conference. And so the organization is making some positive strides.
Well, they're really blowing it for the lottery then. Oh, wait a minute, it's the CHL.
Yeah, what's going on there? Well, Kevin, let's wrap around the rest of the NHL here for a little bit. And I want to start with trades. We talked about the Minnesota deals out there, but what were some trades that you saw out there that went on that you thought are going to have the biggest impact as we're approaching playoff time?
I felt that the moves made by Carolina and Florida in the East have shown that both those teams are looking at making a run this year. I thought getting a scorer like Tarasenko in from Ottawa, I thought that's going to be a nice boost for the Panthers, because I just felt like at times maybe they're lacking a little scoring as they're making their run to the Cup Finals. And Carolina made some moves, too, to help their chances out. So I think both were the teams that benefited the most from the trade deadline. I was kind of surprised. I didn't think Boston really did much. And you have to wonder, after the bitter taste from losing in the first round last year, I thought maybe Boston would have tried to do a little bit more at the deadline. Vegas getting Tomas Hertl, I thought that was a big move. Winnipeg getting Tanner Toffoli, that's going to be huge for the Jets' chances. So, you know, those were the deals to me that stood out the most on the trade deadline day.
Hertl out for a couple more weeks, I think, before he's able to play for Vegas. But, I mean, the guy's got some scoring touch and finally getting a chance to be playing important hockey beyond November. So see how he embraces that at this point. You know, Kevin, Vancouver moved back into the top record in the West, 1 point behind Florida, but they get a nice 9-game homestand to close out March. So does this team come out of that in the position that they're going to have the top record in the NHL come playoff time?
You know, it's hard to say, because sometimes teams that get homestands like that get a little too comfortable and just think the game's going to come to them, and that's when you get shocked a little bit and brought down to reality. So without having their schedule in front of me, I don't know who's coming in, but sometimes those homestands, as nice as they look when you see them on the schedule, they can turn into a bit of a hassle.
5-0 victory over Winnipeg to start that. Colorado then comes to town. Washington, Buffalo, Montreal, Calgary, the Kings, Dallas, and Anaheim. So three playoff teams out of that, four, Dallas, Los Angeles, potential playoff teams, Calgary and Colorado. So chance to clear out the room. But I think you're having a good point as you get, you know, you get to sleep in your own bed all the time for 3 weeks. Maybe you do get a little lax, not the same. So, you know, everybody's kind of talking about how this is going to be San Jose and Chicago are getting the bottom of the league, and they probably will be 1-2 in terms of worst record out there. But you know, if you're a Columbus or Ottawa fan, Kevin, you got to be feeling like your organization is just doing nothing to really make you feel good about where you're going at right now. I mean, are these organizations destined to just be the doormat of the East for a while here?
It's tough because they're just not quite bad enough to get the number one overall pick. Well, granted, you know, we all have our theories on how that lottery tends to work out, but it's like they're not quite bad enough to get the number one overall pick, but they're not even close to good enough to be in a playoff contender. And yeah, both of them are just kind of languishing.
Yeah, and I don't see any, like, light at the end of the tunnel. You know, it's not like there's a hot goaltender that's there for one of the teams, or they got a couple of good scores, or some guys working up the system. I just look at that and think, man, that this is just they're the also-rans. You know, I mean, I'm destined for that for 3-4 more years here, unless they start making some serious free agency moves. I'd be very sad if I were in Columbus or Ottawa right now. But,
you know, Adam Fantilli for Columbus has a chance to become a real star in the league, too. But, you know, he was in the shadows of Connor Bedard when it came to the 2023 draft. But, you know, he's got a chance to be a pretty good NHL player. And there's some other younger pieces on Columbus that could turn into something. But it's going to take some time.
Well, let me give you one more thing out here to close out here tonight, Kevin. You know, 7-8 years ago, there was probably no better rivalry and anticipation in terms of playoff time than Washington and Pittsburgh squaring off against one another. It was just fantastic playoff series every time those teams met. But boy, the offensive production is down for both clubs. Sidney Crosby still having a great year, but this is just not the team you saw a few years ago. And Alex Ovechkin, just not the same at all. So these two teams, you know, are both of them out of the playoffs, and are both of them going to stay out of the playoffs for a while?
Very possibly. You know, they both got old at the same time. You know, they had their stretch of the last 10, 12 years where they were two of the more premier teams in the league, but you know, you didn't see much changing in the roster as far as who the top players were, and you know, these guys aren't going to stay young forever, and I think finally we're seeing it catch up to both of the clubs, and to the point where Pittsburgh was a seller at the trade deadline, trading Jake Guentzel to Carolina. It remains to see with Guentzel if we're going to find out what kind of player he is. Did he benefit from being on the line with Sidney Crosby all these years, or is he the goal scorer that his numbers would tell you he is?
Should be interesting. Kevin Loco, thanks for joining me this week.
My pleasure.